Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
Good morning. It is Tuesday. It is the 9th of May and you're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program where we discuss the issues of the day with a panel. 952-78-4000 is the phone number, as always. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. Should you wish to leave a post, joining me today in the studio, our regular panel member and former ABC correspondent, Nathan Thomas. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Giles.
Back in the studio again, the lovely Roslyn Scott-Gibb. Good morning, Roslyn.
Morning, Giles.
And for the first time in the studio, Victoria Ansola. Good morning, Victoria. Good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. As I said, 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, discussing a variety of subjects, including the latest coming out of the UK as the recent council elections took place last week in the UK. We'll also be looking at Stephen Fry's, the arguments about Stephen Fry being charged under the blasphemy law in Ireland. But we'll start off in La Belle France. The French elections took place over the weekend with Macron becoming the youngest leader of France. At the age of only 39, makes me feel very old indeed. And this seemed to be an overwhelming victory for Macron, and commentators would say it was a welcome slap in the face to the rise of populism and the far right. Nathan, your thoughts on that one, please.
Well, it seems to be, and he did win decidedly. It wasn't one of these elections like we've seen so often recently where it is 52-48 or something like that. He had certainly a decent win, and there's the argument that continues and will continue, of course, how many people really voted for him or whether they just voted against Marine Le Pen. So one way or another, he did win. That caused a big sigh of relief from most of the EU, because that pretty much ends the idea that France is going to try to get out of the EU. So that probably has disappeared as a serious consideration, at least for the time being. It doesn't mean that the EU is all perfect and wonderful again, but the threat that was posed by Marine Le Pen, should she have been elected, seems to have gone away. Now, what he is going to do for France is a little more up in the air, simply because he's the president now, but he lacks a party behind him. There are parliamentary elections in France in June, which may get him some backing. But right now, he really has no real allies, no backing in parliament. So he gets to the problem of how does he pass any of the things that he supposedly was elected to do.
And what do you think this said about French politics? Because we went down to a two-candidate race. They were both from outside the normal political spectrum. And, you know, Marine Le Pen, or Marine as she was calling herself, said now the battle begins. She feels that she's brought in a whole new groundswell of people who are against the federal Europe. Rosalind, your thoughts, please.
Well, she seems to be quite delighted with herself, although she didn't win. She feels she has a very strong voice now, which she may well do. But I have a lot of, personally, my own opinion, a lot of confidence in Macron. I think he has tremendous potential. He's highly educated, all the best schools. He's got very, very good relevant experience, although he doesn't have parliamentary experience. And he's focused. He knows what he has to do. He's put hope where, really, I think on an international level, everybody's beginning to wonder what was happening. And I have confidence that he can do what needs to be done, which, of course, since they have 25% unemployment, that's the first thing he wants to change the laws regarding that and the tax laws. So I think he knows what he needs to do, and I think he's going to get the support that's required. I think, as you say, the French people also were very relieved, as was the EU, of course, because he's very pro-Europe, and I think Europe needs that at the moment.
Victoria, your thoughts on the French election results? Is it a good for Europe? Is it bad for Europe? How do you think that Macron will handle the coming weeks and months?
Well, I think it's a relief for Europe, especially for France, because the threat was there with Le Pen. But I think it's not the best choice for the French people, because I don't think he's going to achieve very much except from stopping Le Pen. And I think it's very clear that every day more in different countries we see that people are not really happy with the politicians that we have as a choice. A clear example is the U.S. that I think nobody really thought Trump would win, but there he was. And France was close to that. Gladly, the French people probably learned from the Americans and they did the right thing. They went out and voted against Le Pen. So I think there is still things to be seen.
A vote, Nathan, against something rather than for something you stand in.
Well, and again, if you go back to the United States, a lot of that election was the same thing. It was a lot of people going for Trump rather than voting for Hillary Clinton. So, you know, that certainly helped him. It wasn't necessarily I'll vote for Trump because I like Trump, but I dislike Hillary and what she stands for and the baggage and everything so much that I would rather vote for Trump. And I think that's what happened. But I think all of these elections are kind of showing that people are sick and tired of politics, the traditional politics that we've seen in a different version most everywhere. So they are voting for people who are not part of that. That was part of Hillary Clinton's problem. She was so established in the political world, and people were voting against that. They have done it in France just from the fact that you had Le Pen and Macron and the two major parties not represented in the final voting. People are against it. But the problem is, okay, you're against that, you've got something else, but you're not really for anything. And what are you going to get? Again, Trump is having problems. Everybody predicts that, you know, he became president, but whether he can actually do any of the things he said is a question. I think the same thing is for Macron. People said, no, we want something new and different, but whether or not he can produce it, or any of these not experienced politicians can produce what they've promised, we just have to wait and see.
Rosalind.
Well, for me, I wouldn't compare Trump with Macron, who is highly educated. I mean, he has a lot of very valuable experience. Trump just inherited billions and, got involved in property.
He didn't inherit billions.
And sorry, I didn't interrupt you. Thank you. And I think one of his advantages really is that he's young, because there's such a problem for young people today all over the world of and the fact that he's 39, younger people can identify with him, and he can give them hope that they too can succeed. I think that's a big issue. I know that there was a lot made about he wasn't really voted in. Macron wasn't really voted in. They were voting against Le Pen up to 40% of the votes, it was stated that I came across. And but I don't think that's important, really. I don't think that's that happens in every election.
So you think that this this brave new young prime minister represents, represents a new France? Should we be should we be bothered that he is so young? And there's been a lot of people harping on about the youth vote, but surely we are a graying Europe demographically. We are all getting older, so a lot of people harp on about the youth vote. Is it really that important? 952-78-4000. We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello there, Bridges. Good morning, it's Brian here.
Morning, Brian.
Yeah, this at the moment untested, intelligent, yes, he's got no parliamentary MPs, he's inexperienced, but I think he's got to learn one thing most of all, other than anything else initially, and that is manners, courtesy. And when I saw him come out of Downing Street after having his meeting with May, you know, with the cucumber sandwiches, orange peak of tea in Coolport, China, and all that business that goes on, out of contempt for me, by going in front of the speakers outside and saying that he wants to invite banks and finance houses to come and join Europe and move over to France. For you, the most amazing thing I've experienced, I think, for many, many years in lack of diplomacy and contempt, you know, by any politician. He might be okay for France. He's totally untested, but I do worry about, I think our situation will probably worsen now within the Brexit scenario. And I think we're really going to head down for a much more bitter, not because of this one individual, but the way things have now developed, a much more bitter, hard Brexit. And we'll have to just see what develops. But I'm not very optimistic about anything at the moment now as far as this thing goes, you know?
Brian, thank you for those comments in there.
Not at all. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Well, Brian, regular caller, 952-784-4000 if you want to get involved with this show. Nathan?
I think Brian is right in that it is going to give the EU much more confidence in the fact that they are not going to have the problems they would have had Le Pen been elected. And as they go into Brexit, whether they're going to be tougher or not. But yes, I think it probably is going to be more difficult with him or with France now a strong part of the EU again, and those questions, you know, not really existing anymore. So I think, yes, it probably is going to be, to some extent, more difficult for Brexit, for the negotiations.
We've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Charles. It's Peter.
Morning, Peter.
Good morning. I think you're missing out on something very important here. I think the number of people voted in France, over a third either abstained or spoilt their ballot papers. I missed the beginning of your show. One of your panelists, she sounds French, would like to know her opinion on it. But there's a thing called ballot blank, where they leave it blank. And there's a movement going on at the moment where they want that to count towards as if it was another member of Parliament, if it was they were voting for that. Now, if that had been the case, that cast more votes than Le Pen, over a third of the votes. And of people polled, more than 40% would have voted if a ballot blank would have counted as a vote. So what they're voting for is not just against Le Pen, they're voting against the system. They're voting against the way that they don't see it as democratic. The French system, as far as I can see, is not democratic, as most Western countries are now. The two parties are undemocratic, and you're getting forced, almost blackmailed, to vote for one because you don't like the other. There seems to be no democracy there.
So you're saying basically what the French results showed, in your opinion, was that it was a vote against the establishment, against the political parties?
Yes, exactly, because France is like here in Spain, it's a socialist country. This man's run on the ticket of doing away with government jobs. He says he's going to bring down unemployment. At the same time, he says he's going to attract people from out of France to bring them back to France to work. So where's the jobs? He's got 10% unemployment. You know, he has to go cap in hand to the European Union. He's he wants to integrate within Europe. He's going to go cap in hand to Germany, and he wants to pull the fiscal resources in Europe, make it even stronger, which is against the German constitution. So they'd have to either change the German constitution or turn him down on that, which he fully knew. So he was running on a lie anyway. And I think that if France were given the opportunity to, I think that if they'd gone to the second round with the left-wing guy, I think he would have won hands down. But I think that the vote, the biggest shock of this is that they're voting against the pair of them, against it, that they don't want a right-wing leader, but they don't want a globalist either.
Peter, thanks.
That's what I can see.
Thank you for that. I've got another caller on the line. I'll just bring him on. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
John from Islington.
Morning, John.
Morning to you. Just to say, I mean, in my lifetime, I think I feel sorry for this guy. I'm going to really struggle. It's going to be hard to get a palm, even if he does. If the public don't want this, they will riot. They will get up in arms against it. And we've all seen what happens in France. It's almost ungovernable. And I haven't seen one government in my lifetime that hasn't capitulated on the strikes, which we'll surely get from them when it comes. It's an amazing success for him. But already we've seen the the talk of, well, disgraceful talk on Macron leaks about foreign accounts and all that sort of nonsense, which is rife through most politics anyway. But anyway, I just think that he's got a hell of a job, effectively, because, as I say, I've never seen a French government that stood up to the crowd.
John,
would capitulate.
Thanks for the call in there. France is almost ungovernable. Rosalind.
Well,
if you were governing France, Rosalind, what could we look forward to?
I think what I feel really is that that he has more potential than the other ones running. Now, I'm not going to say what I would do if I was running France. Thank you very much. That's not for me. I wanted to go back to your original question of with a graying Europe.
Yeah.
How important is it jobs for young people? And I think it's very, very important, because unemployment for young people, the 25% is for young people in France. And as we know, it's almost 50% in Spain. It's very, very high all over. And it's very high in the States as well. And therefore, there's a really, really important issue about finding ways of creating employment for young people. They have to work. You have to have a feeling of satisfaction, of giving, of being of value to society, or there will be huge problems. So the youth are terribly important. It's very important that we find ways to make them feel valuable and to make them valuable.
Victoria, your thoughts on that one? Are we a growing population? Do you think this young, vibrant... I mean, we've seen it in Canada when Trudeau came in, everybody said, oh, he's so young, he's so good-looking. And now we have a young and presumably good-looking French premier as well. I mean, do you think this is a good move for Europe? Do you think this is going to revitalise France?
I honestly don't think it's going to revitalise a lot, because I don't think he's going to be able to do much, although he might try. But I think generally many countries will have to revise their constitutions, because it's obvious that people are not happy.
952-78-4000 is the phone number. studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
You're listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme, with a panel of invited guests joining me on the show today, Nathan Thomas, Rosen Scott Gibb, and Victoria Ansola. If you want to get involved with the show, 952-78-4000, the phone number, studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, should you wish to leave a post. Looking at the repercussions of the election of Macron as president of France, there have been theories, or the reactions, it's going to be bad for Britain's Brexit negotiations. President Macron is a devoted pro-European. His belief in the idea and the institutions of the EU is, some would argue, part of his core beliefs. In his election manifesto, he described Brexit as a quote-unquote crime that would plunge Britain into servitude. And after he met the Prime Minister in February, he told reporters in Downing Street that Brexit cannot lead to a kind of optimization of Britain's relationship, excuse me, with the rest of Europe. I am very determined there will be no undue in advantages. And the argument goes that this sort of attitude will stiffen the sinews of the Franco-German motor that drives Europe. Bad for Brexit, Nathan?
Well, it's probably going to be more difficult, because he's not the only EU minister or head of state from countries in the EU and so on, who has said, you know, it makes no sense to think that Britain will end up with advantages or a better deal in some way or other than people who are in the EU. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. And I think Macron's election, I mean, solidifies that idea. How far it will be carried, I don't know. One of the callers talked about him coming out of number 10 and talking about, you know, luring businesses and banks and so on to Europe. I think there was an announcement yesterday where a number of banks are starting, I mean, not to pack up and leave the UK, that's not going to happen, but where they are establishing bigger bases in the EU and shrinking what is in the UK simply because they don't know what it's going to be like. But if it becomes a problem, they want to be set up so that they can work within the EU. So, yes, I think it probably just because the EU is now feeling more confident about itself and the continuation of the EU as it is going to be more difficult for the UK.
Rosalind.
Well, I think Macron just stated the obvious, that May still doesn't accept or realize that she's not in a strong bargaining position and she's not going to get all of the issues on her side that she had when she was in UK was in the EU. I mean, it's just it's obvious that the EU is simply not going to allow that to happen, because how can they? Because other countries are going to say, well, what are we doing in here? Why should we be paying to be part of the EU when we? So it's I think that's already decided by all the other 27 countries that it's going to be a very, very difficult negotiation, and it's going to take far longer than 2 years. So only as far as from my point of view, he was just stating the obvious.
Nathan.
It doesn't seem to be obvious to many in the UK who continue with this argument, we will get the best deal and they need us more than we need them. It's a nice thought, but I'm not sure how true it is.
I don't think it's based on reality at all.
No.
I think it's La La Land.
Victoria.
Yeah, that's loser's thought, because I think it was a big mistake to Brexit, and the consequences will be paid. Had Le Pen won, well, that would have been wonderful for the UK, because Europe would be a mess. And when there is a mess, you know, some might win.
They were saying, had Le Pen won, it would have really sort of put the EU into total chaos, and also the whole idea of the European Union would have been in doubt.
Well, they would have had a whole lot of other problems to worry about. Whether it would have made it easier for the UK, because again, they would have, I think, jumped into a more protectionist idea that we want to keep those in here that are in the EU. We don't want anyone else leaving, so then we would have to give the UK a bad deal in order to encourage others not to do the same thing. So I don't think either way the UK would have ended up in a better position. It's just whether it is less good than it was would have been the other way.
He's not going to do them anything.
Sorry, Rosalind.
Macron's not going to do them any favours.
Well, we will see if these callers think that's going to be true. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. It's Sean from Fuengirola.
Morning, Sean.
Good morning, everybody. Just a couple of quick comments about this French election and the implications for Europe. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding on the part of some members of the panel about how the UK is in a very weak position. Yes, it is true that Europe desperately needs to protect itself, or at least the bureaucrats, the unelected bureaucrats, of course, who run Europe are in serious trouble, and they recognize that, even though Macron has won this big victory. It's not that big, as Peter pointed out. Only 4 in 10 voters in France voted for Macron anyway. Also, who do you think has financed the massive propaganda that brought Macron to prominence from an almost unknown past? The banksters worldwide and their interest groups, of course. Globalization must not die. The world hasn't been sucked entirely dry yet. If France were to exit the system, like the Brits decided almost a year ago, the globalization empire might crumble with neo-fascism at peril. Hence, the massive pro-Macron propaganda for the elections last Sunday, led by Brussels and Washington and the related big finance and industrial interests and lobbyists. They don't want a collapse of the EU. The elite on either side benefits greatly from the current system, as usual, at the detriment of the populations. So, back to Britain.
Yep.
The UK does not need the EU. In fact, London has already had preliminary talks with China for bilateral agreements, if they materialize, which they probably will. They will most likely encompass more than just China, namely the entire Shanghai Cooperation Council, the SCO, which comprises also Russia, most of Central Asia, Pakistan, Iran, with India as an aspiring candidate. And so if such agreements were to materialize, Britain's market would be linked to more than half of the world's population, and about a third of the globe's economic output. There would be no need for the decaying European Union and her faltering Western allies. Let's be clear. The future is in the East. The West is passé.
Oh, the West is passé. Sean, lots of shaking heads here on the panel, so I'll let them have their thoughts. But thank you for those comments.
Thanks.
Take care. There you go. Sean making some... So we're looking towards the East. The EU is decaying, and we are going to be forming relationships with Shanghai and everywhere. Look East, young man. Go East, young man. Nathan.
Well, I'm sure the UK will do that. There's no question about that. And it's to me seems so obvious. Of course they're going to do their own deals with everybody. The UK will continue to trade with anyone they can, the same way they have within the EU. They will be able to set their own policies with these countries rather than going with EU policies. But it's not like anybody is going to stop trading. The EU and the UK are not going to stop trading. The rules may become a little different for a while, and then, you know, they may be extreme at the beginning, but then they'll ease off and become something much more realistic. And of course, the UK will trade with everybody. Why wouldn't they? But it's other things that connect them to the EU where it's going to be the problem. Trade is going to happen no matter whether they're in or out.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. Excuse me, what's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Mr. Brown. Raymond from Mallorca.
Good morning, Raymond.
Very briefly, Marine Le Pen. There will be another election in 5 years. We'll see then, shall we? Now, the rest of it, the Brexit. Yes, I believe there'll be a hard line. I agree with our Prime Minister, Mrs. May, that she said no deal is better than a bad deal. Europe are going to give us no deal. Right, we've got the rest of the world to trade with. This is correct. What we will see over the... In 2 years' time, we'll see increased unemployment. Already the weekly shopping bill has gone up in the UK. What we will see is... I'll use just one example, because they're countless. We've got the big six energy companies in the UK. Five of them are European-owned. I'm not sure about the sixth one. It's British Gas. It's Concentrica. I don't know who the hell they are. But the other five are definitely one French, German and Spanish. Now then, they could well pull out, and I think they will, but it's not all doom and gloom. We have someone in the background who is waiting with their shopping list with lots of lolly, and they will get some bargains, and that's China. So we won't go without electricity and gas. It'll just be the Chinese. Because that's how it is. We don't invest in our own country. We talk about trade deals with the rest of the world. It's not really down to us. It's down to our foreign owners who own our country. They own our manufacturing. They own everything. It's down to what they want to do. This is what we are. It's a reality check. This is where we are today in the UK. It will not change. The guilty parties, in my opinion, are the financiers in the square mile of the City of London. For years now, they've been investing in foreign countries where they have better returns. They're responsible for the decline of the British manufacturing industry. This is not a conspiracy theory. It's just fact. It's too late to turn that around. As I say, we are where we are, but thank God the Chinese are there. They do have the cash. They've already moved into Britain. Only recently, they took over a part of the rail network. They're financing the nuclear power station in Hinkley Point. Here's an example. In the north of England, in Cumbria, the French were to build a power station. They've pulled out. That's already an indication. But Toshiba from Japan have taken over. They will build and run it. Right, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Raymond. I never thought I'd hear the words, thank God for the Chinese, on this show. But there you go. Sorry, Rosalind, I'll come back to you first, because you wanted to make a point before I went to the caller.
No, I don't know what that was.
Right, okay,
then.
Fair enough, but we'll move on there. Victoria?
The only thing I would say is yes. That I just think it's... I don't think that much positive... My understanding was that they have to go through all the issues of moving out of the EU before they can start forming new alliances. That was my understanding, which I just think it's very complicated and it can take years to get out of the EU.
You're right.
I mean, they have to pay off a supposed debt, et cetera, et cetera.
And we've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Sharon Alley County.
Morning, Sharon.
Morning. I think Raymond spoke a lot of sense, actually, but Toshiba are in big SH1T. There's a big article in the Times about Toshiba about to collapse, and if it does collapse or does go under, our nuclear project is dead in the water. I don't understand why, if the European Union were to collapse tomorrow, which I'm not saying it won't, I'm just saying if it did, globalisation would continue. Everybody's moaning about globalisation, and yet I'm not, by the way, I was misunderstood a few weeks ago. I don't like globalisation. My point was, it's not down to the EU. Globalisation happens anyway. If you want to look at guilty parties, yes, the bankers, definitely, and Macron is a banker, and I have doubts about that side of things. But America, China, Japan, the world was globalised before the EU really got going. Globalisation was coming in slowly before the EU got going. If the EU collapsed tomorrow, globalisation wouldn't collapse with it. And I don't understand why everybody keeps blaming the EU for globalisation. And as Raymond said, our country's not owned by us anymore, so that's not going to change. I think people who voted out are going to be very disappointed. So, thank you.
Sharon, thanks for that point. Victoria wanted to come in on something there.
Well, I think that sometimes I have the feeling that Europeans lost it or have forgotten why the EU was formed. It was to be a strong party to negotiate worldwide for trading. And I think the EU does better together than separately, because all these small countries just fighting in this world against China and Russia, you don't have a chance. So unless you stick together, I think things will get very bad for Europe in the future. And you will have less job opportunities, and it's going to be very messy. That's my thought.
I think that's correct in many ways, and the UK has decided. And again, trade is not certainly the only reason Brexit happened. I mean, that is one issue in it, but there are a whole lot of other issues that are good or bad, depending on how you look at it. But the trade will continue. I don't see that there's any reason that French businesses or French companies that own things in the UK, just because the UK is out of the EU, would change anything. French companies have businesses in other non-EU countries. They do this all the time.
The arrangements that have been made were done through the agreement of the EU, so that has to change. If they're still going to be involved with each other, they're going to have to make new contracts, new deals.
Yes.
It's not going to continue on as it was. And as I mentioned before, that is my understanding is the UK cannot make new deals until they've got rid of the old deals.
That's what the EU says.
The EU.
Yes, yes. They say that they will not negotiate the future until Brexit happens, until the UK is out of the EU.
Yeah, but my understanding is other countries also, whether it's India or China or Singapore, cannot make deals either until the UK is out of the EU.
Well, anybody else can make deals. It's just the UK cannot make a deal with anyone.
Especially not with the conditions that you had as a EU member.
Well, that's right. As long as they are in the EU, they cannot do a separate trade deal or any other deal with anyone else. I mean, the other countries don't care one way or the other.
That's what I said.
Okay.
I'm talking about from the point of view of the UK. And it's going to take them at least 2 years, if not more, to get out of the EU.
That's
so
right.
They're not in. So they're going to be stagnant.
Nothing is
going to happen.
No, nothing is going to happen. They're going to be part of the EU trade agreements that will continue until the day that the EU, you know, until the cut comes. At that point, they will then have to, you know, either go back on World Trade Organization deals or do their own and do them as fast as they can. And yes, it's going to be messy.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Raymond again.
Raymond.
Awfully sorry about this.
Quite all right.
There was another election on Sunday, which was naturally overshadowed by the French one because the French one was more important. But there was a state election in Germany on Sunday, in Schleswig-Holstein. It's an indicator of what's going to happen in Europe in the next 4 or 5 years. Merkel's party was the clear winner. So, and there was a state election very, very recently, the same thing happened. So going by this, it's a fair assumption that at the end of September, her party will win and she will be the Chancellor for another period of time. So that means nothing changes in Europe.
I've already said about the hard line. I know it's coming. In reply to Mr. Thomas, there's a company called Tata, one of many. It owns Jaguar and Land Rover and Steelworks and Tetley's tea bags. Did they purchase these companies with the consent of the European Union? Would that bother them? Did the Chinese have to ask for permission before they financed Hinkley Point Power Station in the south of England? Did they? I don't think so. Did the Chinese need permission to... The Chinese own some of the port authorities in England, by the way. I don't think the Chinese would ask anyone for permission. They just do these things. As far as the French go, we've got EDF, which is an energy supplier. The lady, the French guest would know of this company. It's a big French energy company. It's 51% of the shares owned by the French government, so it's a state company. Now then, they're big in the southwest of England where I was living. The British, all right, we've become very apathetic, very complacent, but there is a little bit of fighting spirit left, a little bit. When we get this hard line in 2 years' time, when they treat us as lepers, I'm sure people in the southwest of England will think, no, we're not having this. We're going to switch to another energy, another electricity supplier. And I think that's what's going to happen. So we don't need, we are doing provisional deals now with many countries. So it's just a question of putting the signature on the paper the day after we officially leave. These things are being set up. Theresa May, in my opinion, she's the best of a bad bunch. I don't think anyone can do it better than she can. I think she's not stupid. We've rolled the dice. They've been thrown. We've got the result. We just keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best. But we can really expect difficulties. I also predict we can expect difficulties in Spain with our residency status.
Okay.
Overnight. Right, thank you.
We'll talk, that's another kettle of pescado that we'll go on to in a minute. Nathan, keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best.
Well, yeah, but I think one of the things we have to understand, there are trade deals, but a company buying into a business in another country, no, that's not necessarily part of an EU agreement or anything else. I mean, there are some things that are governed by EU agreements, other things that are not. A Chinese company, yes, can go to the UK and buy a business, do set up a business, do whatever, the same as they can anywhere else. I mean, it's not all EU agreements that govern everything.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
You're listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, is that me?
It is indeed you, sir.
This is Steve up north.
Good morning, Steve.
I haven't spoke for a little while because I've been a bit busy, but I was just now listening to Raymond talk about the Chinese and their interest in the power business in the UK. I'd just like to remind Raymond that Toshiba is not a Chinese company, they're Japanese. At the moment, China have been tried to get involved in building the Hinkley Point power station, and that was blocked. And they now tried to come back and get involved in the Bradwell-on-Sea reactor. But there has been issues raised about the security concerns of Japanese technology and their own efforts towards constructing anything anywhere. It is a bit worrying for me that the Chinese are one of the trading partners, but they never give you anything for nothing. And even though everybody's saying that business will be found, it was mentioned, I think, over the weekend, there's is it Goldman Sachs or whatever banking companies are saying that it's not going to be a good thing for the UK. I personally myself don't agree that we should have pulled out. We should have tried to stay in the EU and fight our corner. But there is no evidence, and no one's shown any evidence to suggest that Britain will be better off. And at the moment, as people have mentioned already on the show, the prices in the UK are going up already. And it may be 10 years down the road, it may work out. But there's no evidence that in the short term that Britain would be benefiting by coming out of the EU. That's all I like to say.
Steve, thanks for that one. Victoria, you want to come back on a point there?
Well, I have to say that if I was British, I would be very worried that the Chinese were buying me out. I'd rather be bought by the Europeans.
You'd rather be, who would you rather be owned by, Rosalind?
Well, I agree with that. If you look at Africa, every second face is Chinese now. I wonder how the British will feel on an immigration level if they're taken over by the Chinese.
That's the true problem Europe is having, is immigration. Right. Bad immigration.
Exactly. And
that's
and
what's
again,
causing the mess.
A trade deal is probably not going to create a massive influx of Chinese because of, I mean, an immigration policy and a trade deal, I don't know that all of China wants
that
to
was
move
a joke.
To the UK.
That was a joke, actually.
Well,
but immigration,
it may have been, but it
immigration
is a very serious
is,
thing.
Is an issue. Immigration
yes.
is a...
It's a serious
and that,
problem.
And I don't think the British are aware that their immigration issue is not going to change when they come out of the EU. Because so many people I speak to who are British don't realize that Britain has never been part of the Schengen agreement. So they were never allowed in. Immigrants were never allowed freely across the border. So it's not going to change.
Well, Macron has spoken about as well bringing back the Le Touquet agreement that allows British immigration officers to check passports in Calais. So we could see, we could go back to this thorny issue of borders and immigration checks and free movement. And there's a European Commission meeting this week, I think it's Thursday, where they're going to be speaking about the rights of workers in the EU. A group called the 3 Million are going to be represented there for the first time in, I think it's Strasbourg or it might be Luxembourg. I'm talking about the rights of EU nationals at the moment in the UK. It's a big and a thorny issue for the European Commission at the moment.
It's a huge issue. And as you say, the border also is, I mean, because both the UK and France were in the EU and everything, you know, they moved the border there as a convenience. But whether that will continue, again, whether Macron or the EU will say, no, you cannot have the UK border in the EU. You will move the UK border to the UK. Thank you very much. I don't know. I mean, this is something that's to be, you know, is going to have to be negotiated and decided. The one question everybody keeps bringing up is the UK going to be better off in or out? And the question is, how do you decide, or how do you, to what degree do you say better off? I mean, a lot of people say they voted for Brexit because they will be better off because they will have their sovereignty back. They will, you know, have this or that. And there are things that, yes, being a standalone country, you will have the decision-making powers that you don't when you are part of a group. Whether that makes the whole country generally better off or not depends on who you're asking.
Indeed. I'm interested to see Jeremy Corbyn's thoughts on Brexit as well, because, you know, we are, in case you hadn't noticed, we are in the middle of the run-up to a UK election taking place. And Corbyn said he's not going to make it about Brexit. He said this election isn't about Brexit itself. That issue has been settled. The question is what sort of Brexit do we want? What sort of country do we want Britain to be after Brexit? Britain, Labour wants a jobs-first Brexit, a Brexit that safeguards the future of Britain's vital industries, and a Brexit that paves the way for a generally fairer society and an upgraded economy. He also said he was going to stay on as Labour leader after the election as well. An election that many are saying is going to be looking at Labour's being Labour's worst defeat since Michael Foot in 1983. I've seen this week.
Well, I don't think he, so far from the statistics that are information's coming out, I don't think he's got much of a chance. I mean, and what is he saying? He's just saying what every leader is saying.
Well, he said this. He said that they told voters in Manchester that they've got 4 weeks to transform Britain, and this is going to be a vital running. But it's looking pretty much in the wake of the elections midweek that it's going to be Conservative are very, very strongly tipped to win. And also, it seems to mark the disillusion of UKIP as a party because of the UKIP suffered huge losses. We've got a caller on the line. I go to the phones. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, good morning. Sharon Ali County. I've got a question for anybody who might know about our colonial past. We're probably one of the last people to allow to free up our ex-colonies. I don't know whether anybody knows the answer to this. Do people in our ex-colonial countries, India, parts of Africa, virtually the whole world, automatically have a British passport, because if they do, we're going to be flooded with immigration will not slow down or stop when we leave the EU. Instead of EU citizens going over to the UK, we will have more people from India and Africa. Nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying the numbers will not change if because I understand they automatically get a British passport. If they don't, and I'm incorrect, then I stand corrected.
Sharon,
thanks
for that call. Rosalind, you spent a long time in, it was Kenya, wasn't it?
Well, I was in Kenya, yeah. I grew up in Canada also, which is an ex-colony. But in answer to the question, first of all, they do get a they are entitled to a British passport. It has a different letter in front of it or behind it, so that they're slightly put apart. But it's my understanding that the real immigration problem is based on immigrants, people coming from the colonies, from the ex-colonies, and nothing to do with Syria or even the EU. It's much more to do with these ex-colonies like Canada, India, all through Africa, all over the world, Australia.
Right. But Nathan.
But most of them do not have automatically. Yes, they will have a British passport, but it does not give them the right to go to the UK and live there.
They were British. British dependent territories was the.
Well,
was the,
I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, and it's not necessarily the same for all of them. But no, everybody in India, because they were once a colony, does not get to come and live in the UK. I mean, I know specifically what happened with Hong Kong, and it was the same thing. They had a UK passport, but it did not give them the right to move to the UK. So, you know, that really has not.
Enter gives them the right to enter. I don't know about moving. They do have the right to enter.
Yes.
You have students. What about all the students? They're all entitled to go.
No, they're not entitled. They apply and they get a student visa. Now,
well, the fact that you have a British passport puts you ahead of those that don't have a British passport.
Yes, it does. But if the UK decides it's going to grant X thousand student visas this year, yes, people from former British colonies may be at the top of that line, but when they get to 20,000 visas or whatever, then it's over and they're not letting any more student visas. I mean, they just, you know, you are not going to see a flood of people coming from these former colonies because they simply don't have the right to do that.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Most people from Commonwealth countries do not have the right of abode in the UK. A few do if they've got a greater connection, like they've got British parents or grandparents, and everybody needs a visa who does not have right of abode.
Thank you for that call. There you were, clearing up that point with that one. You're listening to Giles Brown on Viewpoint on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. In the second hour of the programme, following the Spanish news and the international news at the top of the hour, we'll be looking at a variety of other subjects, including the blasphemy investigation going into Stephen Fry. Should people be allowed to say what they like? And also perhaps looking at Kelvin McKenzie being fired from The Sun. More after the international news at the top of the hour.